Hello, and welcome to another month of Apocalypse Video's look at the wondrous world of nature. For the month of March, we leave behind the ocean waters and take to the skies to observe the many species that inhabit the world above our heads. This is March of the Penguins and other bird-related films. All month long, we'll be discussing everything from penguins to extravagant plumage in Miami.
Look at me. I'm this short, fat, insecure, middle-aged thing.
I made you short?
Bizarre worlds filled with talking herons.
Hold on! Not my number 7 flight feather! Darn it! That's cheating, you know! Stop laughing!
To the madcap zaniness of ducks.
You know you haven't stopped talking since I came here? You must have been vaccinated with a phonograph needle.
No feather will be left unturned. On this third installment, we enter a bizarre world inhabited by both the living and the dead. A world locked in a power struggle between its creator and an angry parakeet king. A world much like ours, and like our world, it too is fragile and all too close to calamity. In The Boy and the Heron.
So, you made it.
Mother!
Have a seat.
It's this way, Mahito.
A lot of strange things happen in this place.
Please join us. I just hope he stays safe.
Save me.
Save me, Mahito!
What exactly are you?
Dear mother, she's awaiting your rescue. I'll be your guide.
What is this place?
This world is filled with the dead. I know it's a lie, but I have to see. I'm looking for someone.
Let's go.
We must protect this world ourselves.
Go back! Now!
Michael!
You and I aren't friends or allies, kid.
Don't let go, no matter what. Ready?
You see this world? There's more work to be done.
A gray heron once told me that all gray herons are liars. So is that the truth or a lie?
The truth!
That would have to be a lie, too.
Okay, I'm glad, you know, this is one of the... I'm your host, Dave. Thank you for joining us for another installment of Apocalypse Studios looks at the wonders of nature and whatnot in March of the Penguins and other bird-related films, the most unwieldy title ever. We should have watched penguin movies, I'm just saying. Anyway, I'm glad we got one of the Filmversation boys on the podcast because I'm hoping you can explain to me what the hell we just watched. Boy in the Heron. And that Filmversation boy is Mike. Say hello, Mike.
Dave, will you continue my work?
Hey, Mike, we ain't friends and we ain't allies, kid, okay? And I'm also joined by Ryan, who was also equally as perplexed as I was by this strange movie.
No. David! Mahito!
So
you let me die, David.
Can we do the whole episode in the disgusting parrot or heron voice?
This is actually, I don't know about you all, but this is my second time watching this movie. The first time I watched it was with the English dub, which was good. You got Pattinson, you got Defoe doing the old parakeet, like, let me die.
Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill being the strange guy with the hair who created the world.
Florence Pugh.
Who?
You got Flo.
Florence Pugh playing Kiriko, I believe is the name.
Pirate lady, whatever.
And this is the first time this is my second viewing. Watch it with the Japanese dub. They're both good. They're both great. I will say, though, that watching this a second time, I'm no closer really to understanding a lot of this world. Like, it seems like the kind of point of the movie, or at least maybe one point of the movie, comes in at the very, very end, literally a minute before the credits roll, where it's like, by the way, you should forget about your mother and move on. It's okay to forget. Or something like that. It's like the point of the movie emerges amidst all this weird shit. I'm like, was that the whole movie? And is what?
Well, maybe that's what we have to figure out, because Dave is, I think that you're gonna. You're supposed to think, decide. This is art, baby. You gotta. What do you think it's about?
I don't know. Someone explained to me. Here's the thing. I like this movie. I will say here, Hayao Miyazaki, he's one of those filmmakers where it's like he makes a movie and you feel like you're getting a peek into like another realm, like another dimension. You know what I mean? Otherworldly in ways that other filmmakers just don't. He just has this unique ability. I can't make sense of it. I kind of compare him a little bit to like, not in controversy, but in visual style and like, what does this all mean? I kind of compare him to Yoderowski a little bit. You're like, this just seems like such an incomprehensible, yeah. Like, I can't wrap my human mind around this. You know what I mean? Someone explain to me what this movie is about?
He's more approachable than Yoderowski.
Yeah, I would say that, it's like in the same ballpark.
There's just not anybody else that's doing a movie of like a, you know, an animated movie of this scale that is, you know, look into someone's stream of consciousness brain. This doesn't exist. This type of thing. That's what's kind of amazing.
I think it's very like Eastern too. Like, I think that's a thing. It's like part of this story specifically, and it's adapted from a book, I think. And I think it's
It is the thing. It's people thought it was. So he has the book in the movie. But it's not adapted from the book.
Oh, okay.
If that makes sense, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, you're right. But I think it's just not like a kind of a typical three act Western story. I think
break it down like this. It's a Alice in Wonderland kind of stuff.
It is.
That's what I was thinking watching this. You know?
Yeah.
I'll say this is the third time I've seen it, and I do think, I think I get it, but I think I understand this movie, like, less every time I see it, if that makes sense.
When I was watching it, it was the second time, and I was just like, I don't remember this at all in this part of the movie. Like, I don't know, like she gets on the boats, and I think I watched it, and I don't think I fell asleep, but I just think I just kind of, like, it washed over me, and it's all just feeling. It's vibes. It's what kind of...
It is a vibes movie. I mean, it's basically a guy or a kid, like, dealing with the death of his mom and getting over grief, you know? I think that there is, like, a simple core to the movie.
That's the simple... I think there's some other interesting things, but, yeah, I think that's...
Too. Well, like life and death and like holding on to power, I creating worlds. There's a lot going on here. I think you're right. Very stream of consciousness. This is not a direct, like a simple three act structure, which I often find frustrating because that's just how my brain is wired. It's hard for me sometimes to get into stream of consciousness movies because I'm always looking for the point. You know what I mean? And I feel like almost mad when at the end, I almost wish they didn't have that at the end where it's like, you know, you should move on. It's okay to forget or whatever. It's like, I almost wish I wasn't there because it's almost just like, no, this movie did have a point. You know what I mean? It's just like, just don't even bother with that. You know what I mean? I'd rather they didn't even do that.
Watching this too, this time I was surprised like how long it takes for the magical stuff to happen.
Like, same. I clocked it. It was about, this movie's like about like 2 hours and change. It took like 40 minutes for him to go Alice in Wonderland into the other world.
Which is pretty long for like an animated movie. And I think especially like a Ghibli movie, they're not usually like this long.
And that wasn't my memory of it. I seem to remember him going there quicker.
I'm looking back and like it's really, it kind of broke the long thing at On the Wind Rises, which is actually longer than
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
I did a couple years ago where I watched all the Miyazakis in a row type of thing. And it was one of those things like this, it just kept building into the wind. And I've seen The Wind Rises before, but then I realized like, oh, this is everything. Everything he's ever done. This is the last movie of an artist is going to make, you know?
Yeah, he never made another one. After
Into the Wind Rises. And then you're like, and it's all about, you know, was it worth creating, you know, like, was it worth making these animated movies at all if they're going to just kill people or whatever, or be a capitalism, basically, you know? And then it's like, yeah, it was. It was worth it. You know, it was worth making those, the deaths of just making planes, but even though they were going to kill people kind of thing. And then this movie comes around and it's just like, fuck it. You know, fuck. It doesn't matter.
Just do whatever the hell you want.
They'll do whatever. You can do, keep going. I feel if
like,
you want,
like,
you know?
Miyazaki's old, right? Like when he made this, he was less old, but he's still, you know, this was what, how old was he? He was in his 70s, right?
When, he's when in his mid 80s now, I think.
Well, it feels it like a 10 years, movie made by someone who is old in like a good way. Like there's, it's like patient, I would say, this movie. Like there's so many shots of this movie where it's like just lingering on grass or something for a while.
But you don't get that often with animation. Because with animation, right, it's expensive like, and it takes forever to produce.
Yeah, you can't just like put the camera there and look at the grass for a while. You got to animate all of it.
It's funny you say that because there's a moment when he discovers the how did you... This is it was the people thought this was based off, which it kind of is this book called How Do You Live? I don't know much about it, but
the title, that title, by the way, I always think of it as like accusatory, like how do you live, how do you sleep at night, but I think it's more like innocent, like how do you live, like what do you do, what is your life like. I think that's more the vibe it's going for.
It's from 1937, it looks like, and it's like a it kind of reading this little plot, it doesn't really seem like it's following this thing, but there's like ideas in it. But he finds the book. I mean, this is skipping ahead, but when he like leaves to go find his, I guess it's his aunt mom, right?
His aunt mom. Yeah, it's his sister.
And so when he finally like goes to help out with all the housekeepers, it lingers on the book for like, I'd say 5 seconds, you know, kind of thing. Mm. And it's just like a interesting, you're right, animation, you don't see that shit. Type of stuff, even in anime.
We the plot as it is, because I think a lot of this is just like you said, stream of consciousness, but the plot basically opens with this kid's mom, Mahito. His mom dies when they're when the hospital she's in
I think it gets bombed
or something. It's during World War II.
Bad time and place to be, Japan in World War II.
Yeah, the hospital she's in like blows up. She's in there. A crazy sequence, like a crazy way to open the film with the air raid
siren. Yeah, like the opening shot of this movie, I think, is the air raid siren going off. Like it's a startling. It reminds one of The Wind Rises opening with the earthquake.
Yeah, yeah, and just like crazy animation, like you know,
yeah, really fast stuff. That's kind of the thing in this is like fast.
And I think too, like the animation in this scene in particular, the opening is a little different than it's almost like a little dreamy or like a little surreal. Yeah. It's really well done. And like, it's a wild way to start a Ghibli movie.
And then smash cut to boom, like tank treads, you know, and just it's 3 years later, his mom has died and his dad is remarrying, I guess, his mom's sister.
Yeah. Younger sister.
Nasako?
Awkward.
Is that right? Awkward. And basically they're going to the village where she lives. The dad works in like the military factory or something, like building like
is
I
that
guess
what it is, military? I forgot.
Well, he works for some factory that builds like the cockpit, like glass for like
I think it's like again like very autobiographical with like Miyazaki during the war also like basically low-key this happened to him. I mean, I don't know about the Heron, but he relocated during World War II. And his dad worked on something to do with the war effort, but also was like, there was a lot of conflicting feelings there because I don't think the dad was like pro-war, but he was also just like, well, it's my job is to make the plane parts or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I think, it seems like it's sort of in a place where they built this factory, probably like in an old village. And so they're like this kind of rich family moving in, or maybe they've been there a while or something. Like she's maybe part. It must be the family has been always part of like this thing.
I think, but he's new there. The kid is new there. I get the feeling it's like their country house or something or whatever.
They make a big deal. Like you're going to be the first. They're definitely rich. Only kid to show up in a Datsun. Like, oh. And all the kids hate him. Like, fuck this rich kid.
It's funny that shot when he first like, or that scene when he first goes into class, like all the kids are just like, given
there's not a lot of dialogue for that first 45 minutes,
and I love either. It's like montage, like it's like we don't really need much. Like he's a new kid, he's rich, there's this village, they hate him, and rather than go to school he's like, I'm just gonna like bash my head with a rock so I could stay home and explore.
He can feel
that
something gnarly.
That's like Mick Foley levels of blood on his face.
It's fucked up. And I'm thinking about like, you know, you're going to see the English version of with your kid to this, and all of a sudden the kid's bashing his head with a rock, and it's just like
the mom has been incinerated in flames. And
Well, to be fair, this is a PG-13 Miyazaki.
It's true, but yeah, it was pretty gnarly. It's funny because you're right. There's not much, like he doesn't even say anything. I think really until like that 45 minutes.
He starts talking to the Heron, like, who are you? Like, basically, he gets to the village.
So
he doesn't like what's going on. Like, obviously, you know, he's got conflicted feelings. Like, this is my mom's sister who's going to be my new mom. And she's pregnant, by the way. And the whole time this is happening, he's trying to adjust. You got these, like, housekeepers or whatever who are like, ooh, you got smokes. Ooh, she brought, like, fresh fruit because it's the war effort. And
the housekeepers are like one organism. They're like,
Can't be.
Oh, it's so tasty with rice.
Salmon? Give me the bones.
Why did he know you could still get corned beef?
And there's one more thing.
We can make rice cakes.
And sweet bean paste.
You like cakes.
Sugar.
I want to taste.
Let's leave him to it.
So some places still have it. How'd you get your hands on smokes?
Can I have one, please?
And this whole time, all this is happening, he's trying to adjust. You got this freaking Michael Myers-esque Heron that is just stalking him. I was getting Michael Myers vibes. Did anyone else?
Yeah. Did you see, like, the first time the Heron shows up in his windowsill and, like, says something to... I forget what he says, but I think he says, like, I know where your mom is or whatever.
Oh, no, he goes... because he keeps dreaming about his mom or saying, like, save me, Mijito, whatever. And then he goes, like, save me, Mijito.
And he flies away, and there's bird shit all over the windowsill. Like, he just, like, shit in his room. It's so funny.
And eventually it comes to a point where this kid, Mijito, is just like, what the fuck do you want? I'm going to kill you. Leave me alone. It escalates so quickly where he's like, I'm going to grab this stick, and I'm going to kill this Heron.
He crafts a bow, an arrow.
Well, he pays the groundskeeper with smokes to help him make the arrows or something?
Yeah.
Or teach him how to do it, I guess.
I'm going to kill this Heron. And eventually the Heron leads him to this weird tower, this weird stone tower on, like, that's a little bit off the property, or it's on the property.
That's my favorite part is when the Heron goes into that window and then does a little peek and then comes down. You know what I'm talking
like,
about?
Yeah, just kind of peeks again. He goes in there, and that's kind of when the movie really kind of gets going for me. So it's like, that's when the journey's about to start.
That's when,
it's like,
when it gets to Alice in Wonderland stuff.
Exactly. Like, it's like, I thought that, like, one of the housekeepers.
Because the
like,
whole time, other than the Heron speaking and maybe the stuff with some of the toads or whatever, it's basically, like, reality. But then when they go into the tower, it's everything.
Yeah, what's the deal with the toads? Like, I don't know what that means. You know what I mean? There's, like, the toads come out of the water and, like...
Yeah, they're like, join us.
She's waiting for you to rescue her.
Please join us.
Join us.
Join us. Join us. Join us. Please join us.
There's a lot of like big groups of things, stuff like swarming. There's a lot
Could
of swarms.
It be like join us in like
death,
wallowing in grief, or it's better down here just to grieve and to and rather than forget. Is that maybe an interpretation?
We all float down here.
But anyway, at one point, while this is all going on, while he's trying to get this hair, at one point his Natsuko, his mother-in-law, wanders into the forest. He sees her. And then she goes missing. They all go after her. And then he and one of the other housemaids, Kiriko, they go in and they find, like, this is really where the movie, like, I mean, at this point, we've had a talking heron, talking toads. But at this point, the movie really veers into, like, what is real and what is not. They find, like, this, like, abandoned, what looks like a library. They follow the heron in there. They don't follow the heron in there. They follow footsteps. They believe they're following Natsuko. And then suddenly a door falls down behind him and the heron shows up. And basically at this point, this is when they just go into Wonderland. They literally like melt into the ground.
After Mahito
like manages to shoot an arrow into the beak of the heron. And you realize, again, I have no idea what's going on. There's a guy in the heron.
I love this. That you think it's like, I don't know. In my head, when I like heard of this movie being made, which is one of the cool things about this movie, there was like no
trailer really until there was no release.
No promo materials. It's just like
it's the one poster that's like the weird looking bird.
So I feel like you hear like, oh, there's a movie, The Boy and the Heron, that Miyazaki's been working on for years, and it's a Ghibli movie. And I'm thinking in my head before I saw it, like, oh, there's gonna be this majestic heron, and like it's gonna be like this beautiful thing. Like I'm thinking about Spirited Away and like the dragon, and then it's just this little stinker. Like
he looks like
Danny DeVito.
It has very, it's kind of Dave energy a little bit when he comes out later, you know, when he starts kind of popping around and he gets his beak pierced. What was the toast line from Birdcage? It was
you pierce the toast, you pierce the beak,
you pierce the beak.
Which I guess is like the secret to his being able to exist in this
like magic feathers
and
stuff.
So the Robert Pattinson voice is like really good for that. I think we could all agree. What did you think of the Japanese? Since it's the first
Both
time you
great.
Saw the Japanese,
I have no notes on any of the voices on either version. All great.
Yeah, I think I prefer the Japanese one just because it's like it fits it a little bit better, you know. But the English one here is really well done.
Well, I think they're kind of like, I was saying this to Dave before we started, like, since Disney doesn't do these anymore, it's all that G-Kids, I think they work really close with Ghibli a lot for how these are going to go about with these. Like, and people, I remember when they announced, like, oh, in America, the movie's called The Boy and the Heron, and we're like, what kind of studio note was that? But I think it was Miyazaki or his producer, like, they were like, we can't call it How Do You Live in America, you know, kind of thing.
I think it does, like, it comes off as like I was saying, I think when you hear that in English, it comes off as like accusatory or something, like How Do You Live, like it is again, like How Do You Sleep at
Night?
Is it
not called Boy and the Heron in Japan?
It's How Do You Live.
Yeah.
Oh, it is How Do You Live There. Okay.
Yeah, and I think that's probably why, is like it probably is just a different annotation or whatever how we kind of take that, you know. But I think it was their idea. You know, they were like, I think they pitched it to the G Kids when they were doing the region stuff.
What is G Kids? Is it just like the American Ghibli? Is it Ghibli Kids?
No, they're like, I think they're all, they're like, they've been around now for a while, but I think it's just like, it's the now probably like the head, other than, what's the other one? The Crunchyroll. What's the like,
Funimation?
Like, I think they're just like another Funimation.
Okay.
But they're like, I feel like they do like everything now. Like almost every like movie, I feel like that comes out. It's
every
like,
movie is G-Kids?
Not everyone, but I see a lot of the stuff I see.
Avatar, was that G-Kids?
No, I mean, I'm talking about like translated or Americanized, not Americanized, but brought over from Japan stuff. And I think even live action stuff too, I feel like. But they're just like the big distributor now. They took over for Disney stuff like back in after the Wind Rises stuff. Anyway,
I did see like I'm not very familiar with Buddhism, but I did in reading about this see that some people were kind of saying that this is like a very Buddhist movie, and like the way that Buddhism will deal with like cycles and breaking out of cycles, and that's kind of like, you know, this movie, you know, cycles of grief and stuff. And like once you get into this Alice in Wonderland world, a lot of these characters seem like they're trapped in sort of like these, I don't know, trapped in cycles that they need to break out of.
Well, it's like the living and the dead, and there's more dead than living in this Alice in Wonderland world.
Well, I think it's a lot of people who like need to let go, and like, you know, like the builder, right? Like, he's done with this shit. Like the god, the grand uncle, but he can't let go, you know?
Well, I think I didn't really think about last time, like the relationship with like the sister too, like his new mom, is that like, there's a moment where she's like sick, 'cause she's like pregnant and stuff, and she's in bed, and,
Mahito.
You know, he comes up, and then she like says like, "I'm sorry, sister. I didn't like save you," kind of thing, and like to him, you know. And then so I'm like, oh, she's going through her own grieving process too, you know. And she probably feels just as guilty now that like, oh, I have to take care of this, this kid, all these things, and I'm pregnant, and it, like, so she's having her own like kind of weird adventure with the heron down there. Not the heron, but like her own like Alice in Wonderland journey.
Yeah.
So it's all, it's about that. And I think the Grandmaster thing, Mihoto and that guy are both Miyazaki, you know, they both are.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like you can definitely see like Miyazaki in the grand uncle for sure. Like about like an old guy who can't give up his work, you know, and is trying to pass on to the next person. But you know, his stupid,
and waiting for the right next person.
His stupid son Goro's not picking up the torch.
I was gonna say, like, Goro ain't doing shit, and so he's just like, you can do whatever you want with Goro. I don't care anymore. It kind of has to do, like, there was a long time where they weren't allowing Ghibli merchandise until like the 2000s. You know what it was? It was like he was like really strict on that, and then they're like, you're like, Miyazaki-san, we need to pay these people that work for our company. We don't make enough movies to sustain. We need to sell some goddamn Totoros, you know? What the hell? You know?
We need some Kiki's stationery.
Yeah, I know. And now it's all over. It's crazy. Like, they were just like, and then they probably make more money off that than they ever did movies.
100%. Oh, definitely. They've got to.
Like, I mean, you see Totoros everywhere.
But I'm just saying, like, so I think this is part of that stuff, all that kind of those ideas. Yeah. Like that, it's like
my officially licensed tattoo.
I think letting go of like your importance of the work or something. I don't know. It's a lot of that kind of stuff, I think. Like, maybe.
Yeah, so you literally get like time travel stuff. Not time travel, but like the possibility of the idea of maybe if I could go back and change things. You know what I mean? There's literally like a hallway of doors where it's like, oh, well, this will get you out to this time. Or
it's
this,
so,
or this.
Yeah, this movie's weird. It is like
interstellar shit.
Lynchian, I would say, too. Like in the way that it's like some of this stuff, it's just like stream of consciousness or like images that are like evoking a mood or feeling more than telling a specific story, I guess, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, Dave, what you were saying, like that kind of storytelling frustrates you. And that's sort of my thing with a lot of Lynch stuff is like, I kind of hate this movie, but I also love that it's like, I love it at the same time.
Well, and
it's
that's
like,
why I gave this 4 stars, even not really knowing what was going on for most of the movie. Because again, there was a moment where it really struck me when he goes in, or he melts away into the heron, or no, basically, so they go into that, so to kind of get back to the somewhat plot of this movie, like, they go into the library place, they see the Grandmaster up there, and he basically, who's voiced by Mark Hamill in the English dub, and tells the heron, like, you gotta lead this boy to me, or whatever, like, put him on his journey, whatever. He's like, alright. So they melt into the ground.
He must go on his hero's journey.
They go, they go into this other world, and there's a moment where he meets up with Florence Pugh, Kiriko, I guess the young version of the older housemaid that went with him. It's almost like she transformed into like another person.
Yeah, she's like, we saw her as this, almost like the housemaids are almost like a different, they're not humans. They're like these like little stump, fat, squat things. But then we see her transform into like a beautiful young woman.
There's a lot of them. Do they all
who's
work,
like fishing and like there? She has like this job of like getting fish to provide to like these weird, I forget what they're called, Wara Wara.
She's like Wara. She's almost like the Han Solo of the movie.
Yeah, and she's like fishing, and there's like this moment when they're delivering the fish to like these little white new Totoro toys that are going to sell kajillions of dollars. And like it, you see all these fishing boats, and like you see like these guys that are just like black. Like, I don't know how quite to describe them. They're like, they're wearing like fisherman's clothes, but they appear to just be like black mucusy kind of like beings. They're hard. It's hard to explain what they are, but like you just see them all lined up and they like nod to her. And it's just like, at this point, I have no idea what these people are supposed to signify, but it's so imaginative that it's like, I'm along for the ride. It's like I'm watching someone dream.
Yes, it is very like dreamlike.
I can't explain it, but it's just,
there's a lot
you
of like
experience.
Dream logic with some of the movie.
Yeah,
I would say.
Yeah,
a weird movie.
Like weird. Oh, like you can't open up the gate, and the Pelicans push me into the gate, and so it's like it's like a single gate, but isn't there like no wall around it? It's just like somehow the really strange dream logic. It's like like I said, like I don't know if we can really explain the plot of this movie. So he goes into this underworld, Alice in Wonderland thing, to get his.
I mean, we kind of have been, you know. It's like it's you know, it's that 40 minutes. It's setting up like what's going on, right? World War II. He's
grieving his mother,
and then his family's got this weird dynamic where like the sister in law is now the mom, and then in the midst of all that, he goes into his Alice in Wonderland adventure and. Meets all these fantastical creatures that mean something.
He meets fantastic creatures. There's like weird dynamics. Like there's like it's like a lot of the people in this world seemingly were brought here, like almost against their will. And now like pelicans, for example, like there's no fish. So we got to eat these white things that fly up into the sky and become humans, I guess, like in the other world.
Young one, put me out of my misery. My wing is broken. I cannot fly.
That's what you get for trying to attack the Wara Wara.
We did not choose this life. My kind were brought to this hellscape so we could eat the Wara Wara. This sea here has few fish we can eat. My kind were all starving. We flew as high as we could. As high and far as our wings could carry us. But it always ended the same way. We could only reach this island. Now, our newborns are forgetting how to fly. We eat the Wara Wara. The Fire Maiden burns us. This sea here, it is cursed.
It's very strange. There's a lot of weird world building. I'm not sure what any of it means. And then you got this power dynamic between parakeets and the leader, voiced by Dave Bautista in the English dub, wanting to be the one like, no, I want to control the shapes that control the world. It's just like, huh? It's very strange.
The parakeet society is like one of my favorite things about the movie. It's very funny that like there's a couple shots where you really linger on just the entire society of the parakeets. Like it does like the it's almost like a Wes Anderson-y kind of shot where it's just showing a bunch of like, look at my boat or whatever, and from Life Aquatic, where it just shows like a diorama of everything that's going on, and there's all the like, you know, they're like chopping food and like going about their day and stuff, and it's delightful, but they're also very menacing, right? Like there's the shot where they like captured Mahito, and he's like the parakeet's like getting the blade on the whetstone to sharpen it up to eat him or whatever. It's good stuff. I like all the stuff with the parakeets.
I don't understand what it means, but it's cool looking.
You know, I also think like it doesn't have to mean anything. Like, you know, it probably does.
Well,
it's a weird
power struggle, but I don't understand what it's supposed to signify. Is it Miyazaki trying to push back against like something? I don't know, like a, like Disney, like the capitalism. Like,
well, I don't know if it has to like be anything like other than just the I want to have fun with the parakeet stuff, or, you know, like, I don't know if there has to be a deeper meaning for some of this stuff.
This is where I get into, like, movies are a hell of a thing, and particularly animation, because there was things where they were like, they were able to maybe animate like a minute, a month or something. And supposedly when you look into the trivia, like at some point they were only animating like a minute a month or something.
And he kind of does like, there's a couple docs. What are those called? Where he kind of does every frame himself. I mean, not every frame, but like he kind of like does like storyboards almost like the whole damn movie. And then I think some people like film the spaces and stuff, but he's like doing everything, you know,
which is crazy. I mean, that's crazy.
And I think I also read that this was like the most expensive Japanese film ever made.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's animation. It's hand-drawn animation.
And I imagine some of that. I mean, this was famously, like, delayed and forever. It did take a long time to come out. Yeah.
And it got me thinking, like, because it is a hell of a thing to see, but it's, like, the most expensive Japanese film ever made, took years to make. You have really no idea what it is. And it got me thinking, like, movies as an art form are very, because he could have just like splashed all this stuff out like on various like drawings and paintings, and that's a thing, like paintings, you see like these dreamlike things, but it got me wondering, it's like, goddamn, like on one hand I hate him, but like you got studio executives and it's just like, dude, what the fuck is this? You're using so much goddamn money and this makes no sense. Like, what the fuck is this? So it's like, I sometimes see, like, it's that weird line between, like,
why can't we just have a nice Godzilla minus one, you know?
We gotta make some money on this. It's like, it's that weird line of trying to maintain your artistic integrity, but it's like, also, this is costing so much fucking money.
It made money. It did well.
It did do well, yeah.
Well, I think the thing is, it's also, I think, the highest in the U.S., I think, too, at this point.
Oh, the highest grossing Miyazaki?
I think...
so suck it, Dave. It worked.
Well, I think the thing is, like, he's gained enough goodwill to do it. You know, you'll let him cook. You know what I mean?
Well, it's God, like, bless. But at the same time, it's just like, it makes me, I always think back to this sometimes, like Devil's Advocate, where it's just like, well, it's like, you got to make some money or you can't keep making these.
Yeah.
You know
well, he
I mean?
Made, just, he made money, Dave.
That's
he made
a little, lot
well,
of
no,
money.
No, it I did, but it's just like, really... I can understand sometimes why it's like, it's that weird paradox where it's like, you want to let the artist cook and let their imagination flow, but movie making is like the most expensive form of art ever.
You should see, I finally pulled up the Kingdom of Dreams and Madness documentary.
Is this about Miyazaki?
I should. Yeah, it's basically a great documentary about you've probably seen the memes of like Miyazaki like talking to cats and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Look at this cat. He has no schedule.
Yeah, yeah. And it's all, he says this himself, Dave. He's just like, this is suck. This is worth, what am I doing? You know, I'm spending all this money and it's taking so long. And I'm sorry I take so long, everybody. It's like, I want to make you all soup today because I'm a fucking madman, you know?
I guess what I'm getting at is like, it's almost like the idea that movies like this happen are almost as, what's the word? Paradoxical that they happen as this movie itself. You know what I mean? It's just like, how does it happen?
Well,
how does Avatar happen?
I think this was like so unexpected in a way too, because, you know, Miyazaki's had a long career and none of his movies have really been like this, like tough to understand. Like
he's more like Takahata is the one that's a little bit more vague.
Surreal. Yeah.
And like that beginning you're talking about with like the fire and the way it's sort of like brush, like kind of.
Oh yeah. That's very, very Takahata.
Like at the one he did, the Tales of Princess Kaguya. That's all in that style. Yeah. And that was like one of the hardest animated movies I think ever. It's like white and just like, it's like paint.
Do you know if Miyazaki worked on that at all?
I mean, he's not listed as anybody. It was basically Miyazaki, Takahata, if you look at the Ghibli thing. And then, and then eventually a couple, like Goro and some other guy.
Goro made the CG one, right?
Yeah, and the Tales of from Earthsea, which I've actually never seen. But I don't think people
love
that.
You're dead to me, Goro.
But yeah, like
to the dark side.
Like Grave of the Fireflies, for instance, like the beginning of this movie looks like that. And that's like the what's nuts about Grave of the Fireflies was it came out as a double feature with Totoro. Like the same same time. Same
double. It was like what's that Tarantino Robert Rodriguez Grindhouse?
Yeah, it was like Grindhouse, but it was My Neighbor Totoro and Grave of the Fireflies about two kids that are like two ghosts wandering after fucking getting bombed by nuclear shit. It's crazy. Anyway, but that's in that vibe, you know what I mean? Like very kind of surrealist sort of stuff. So he's not really, he doesn't really do this type of thing. You're right. Because even Wind Rises gets into surrealness kind of stuff, but it's following like a boy.
It's all very easy to follow. Like he's never made a movie, I think, where I was like confused about what was going on.
Yeah, yeah.
You were confused during this movie?
No, that, I'm saying until this movie.
Oh, until this one. Okay.
He's never made one that I was like, I wasn't watching like Spirited Away.
Spirited Away
is
probably the closest, maybe. I mean
kind of... it's similar themes of like Alice in Wonderland-y for sure, but that is so much more straightforward of what's going on.
Well, yeah, there's a lot more like talking and there's like people like doing this, doing that, but it is like wild. It goes into weird places and stuff, but it's a lot.
This movie, like I said, it feels like it's made by someone who is old and is like patient and contemplative and maybe doesn't care about like it feels like it's made for him, you know, or like
so
he's not making
so
it for anyone.
In that sense, this feels like one of those very rare movies where it's like a guy who garnered a ton of goodwill, you know, had some hits, you know, basically
some
defined
hits
the genre,
putting it mildly.
It's like, well, yeah, we'll give you money, fuck it.
I mean, I think Miyazaki is got to be up there for like the consistency of his movies. Like if you look at his filmography, it's like as close as you get to like everyone is a masterpiece, I'd say, you know,
one after another, you know,
like there's no real misses. Like some are better than others, I guess, but
well, the thing is, yeah. I think one of them is everyone is someone's favorite, you know.
Yeah,
like yeah. Some people will be like, oh, Ponyo, my kid loves Ponyo or something, and now it's become a favorite, or you know,
Princess Mononoke, like it's like every one of them is like such a pillar.
Yeah, a friend told me like Porco was their favorite, and it's in that and stuff. That's probably like one of his, the people talk about lower tiers. I think I'm wrong, but you know.
Yeah, and this one, it fits oddly in it. Like I just keep coming back to the fact it feels like, in a positive way, it feels like a movie made by someone old. I couldn't help but think of Megalopolis when I was watching this. Mm-hmm. Just like a similar thing, right? Like a massive production that's like by this like titan of film, and you know, whatever you say about Megalopolis, I don't think it really was quite what he wanted it to be. And you know, I don't know, it's just interesting like thinking about those two, because they're probably about the same age. And
well,
like,
and the funny thing, I would think that this, since it's hand-drawn animation, that this I would think is exactly what Miyamoto wanted it to be. I would think this movie feels like like someone
Miyamoto
waking up and like having a dream, a really weird dream, and like writing it down, and it's then like we're gonna
Dave,
make a movie out of that.
It's Miyazaki. You said Miyamoto, the
Miyamoto, sorry.
Inventor of Mario and Zelda.
Sorry about that. Well, themselves feel like a fever dream, especially Mario.
No, I think you're totally right. It is someone wrote down. Lynch is the closest thing you could probably.
Yeah.
You know? Like if Lynch
Which
could
is,
make...
It's crazy. Like going into this, I never would have expected that I'd be, that's what this would have been, you know?
Yeah. Like I think that's probably the closest thing. Yeah, it's probably like a David Lynch thing or something where you're just like, things are recognizable, but you don't understand it or what they mean. Like, I can't. Yeah, it's weird.
It makes me think, like, is there ever, well, maybe there will be, but maybe not on the scale, but like, is there going to be anything like this again? It just seems so singular and so.
Yeah, we're kind of at the end. This is kind of the end of the one last. This might be the last time ever.
Well, I mean, the fucking hand drawn animation like this.
They got the AI trained on the Ghibli stuff now, so you can just auto generate any Ghibli story you want.
Yeah.
Miyazaki, the funny thing about him is like he keeps saying he's gonna retire and then he doesn't. Yeah. I know he famously did that with Wind Rises, but I know he's like talked about retiring as early as Princess Mononoke.
He did present this as like his last movie, but like there's kind of rumbling that maybe.
Yeah, I was gonna say, do you know if he's like,
there's nothing official announced, it looks like, but
because he's an old man, right?
85,
like,
85.
I don't think he has time for another one of these.
Yeah.
Maybe I think like the thing is you realize like he, and that's kind of what this kind of movie's about a little bit too, is just like, I don't really have anything else to do. Like, this is it.
I think there's some sadness and acceptance really in this movie that I feel like part of the theme in this movie is like, I'm not going to pass on the, like, him realizing there's no one I'm passing the torch to. Like, when I'm done, it's probably...
It's coming with me.
Exactly. Like, Goro's not picking up that torch.
Well, I think he also, it's, yeah, it's almost just like, well, if I die, who cares what happens to the company? And he probably did at one point care.
Yeah.
In a weird
way. I mean, I think if, Dave, you were talking about, like, what does it all mean? I think one of the ways to look at this is, like, obviously, like, the granduncle is Miyazaki to some extent, although pinning that, I know he's like said, Takahashi is the uncle and I'm the boy, but I think Miyazaki's kind of both of them. But there's a way to, like, that whole world that they're in is just Studio Ghibli, you know, and like, yeah, in the way that it all falls apart at the end is like, well, that's what's going to happen.
It's almost like, you could say, like, he's both characters, the old wizard guy or whatever his name is, I forget, the granduncle, and the boy. Like, it's almost like he's reflecting back on his life a little bit, possibly.
Yeah.
He's both those characters.
And I think, but I think Studio Ghibli is this world, you know, that they've built.
And it doesn't make any sense, you know, it's like stuff, you know, like her comment popping up, the one that comes to mind is like all these pelicans attack him or to like push him through the gate. And she's like, why'd you let the pelicans through the cemetery gate? Just like, oh, they pushed me through. It's like, what is that? I don't know what the hell that is, what that means. Like, why? Like, what's going on? And she does like a little like ritual to like fend off the ghosts that they.
Yeah, it's like, don't look away. Walk backwards.
Yeah. It's like, okay.
Okay. Okay.
So I think you're just supposed to. Yeah, it could be frustrating, but I think it's I don't know.
It's a frustrating movie, I would say. Like, it can be. It's like one that I see every time I see it, I'm like, part of me is like, I want to watch it again, and part of me is like, I never want to watch this again. Like, I don't know.
Well, I think the frustrating part for me, because like you just nailed on something. It seems like there are things in place, like rules that are put in, like, I got to do this thing with, like, there's procedure with this world, but like, what does it all amount to? You know what I mean?
He's kind of into that. Like, I was thinking about his, like, you know, watching someone cook, or like when he's making the arrows, and we're just like every little step. Yeah. But he's into that kind of stuff, like, you know, like those. And like, there's not really like, why is the heron's wing making the arrow fly by itself? I don't know. This does.
Yeah. That's my number 7 wing, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, I can imagine like being at Ghibli, like working on this movie where you're like wondering that, but you're like, I'm not going to ask. Like,
no one's going to ask.
No one's going to ask him. Like, Miyazaki, what does this mean? Why? No one's going to do that.
Well, he knows what it means. We trust him.
I watch this probably like once a year, but it was like the year after Fablemans came out, and there's a interview, like one of those variety actors on actors, and it's Laura Dern talking with Michelle Williams, and they're talking about how like Laura Dern had to be like the mediator to get Lynch in the Fablemans, because they never met. I mean, they never really been friends, Spielberg and David Lynch, for some reason. And she does this quote that makes me just like, so it's so funny. And it reminds me of this a little bit, where she says, like,
he goes, it's so funny. Steven and I, we realized we were born the same year. They just realized this as they were working together. And he said, it's true. We have a vision and we have to make our vision, and we make it. You know, Steven goes out there and he has an idea and he makes it. And a million people have that same love of that vision. And he goes, it's the same with me. I have a vision and I make it. And he goes, and hundreds of people have that same vision.
And hundreds of people love it.
Yeah. So it's just like, it's kind of a similar thing with this. It's just like, this guy tapped into some kind of crazy thing. It's a once in a lifetime or once in a, I don't know. Like, look at this guy has existed for as long as the medium has existed. You know, it was like movies, basically. You know, it's like, and I'm saying, like, it's easy to die. I'm trying to think, is it the guys that make the Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse movie, the next step? I don't know.
K-pop Demon Hunters?
K-pop Demon, I don't know. I'm just saying, like, there's nothing else. There is.
Like, as far as 2D animation like this.
Well, just that on. And just, like, this from scratch, how this feels, you know? Like, it's from nothing. No, I'm trying to think. I mean, yeah, Pixar's lost the juice. I don't know. Maybe the new one's good. There's a new one.
But maybe it's not the same.
Hoppers.
Hoppers, poppers.
Where they take someone's brain and put it into like a thing so they can inhabit a robot squirrel or something.
It's sad. They even make a joke about it because I saw a trailer and I'm like, this is Avatar. And then the trailer did it. I'm like, oh, no, I don't want to watch this.
No. Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, yeah, because this guy has existed when Walt Disney was around. I don't know. It's weird. That's how it makes me feel. Those are the feelings I think he's trying to get across. It's like, that's all, really.
It's kind of a sad movie, but also not, I don't know. It's mournful, reflective, mournful.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting, though. Yeah, I think you're right that it's probably one we should probably revisit every 10 years or something and probably get something else out of it.
I feel like this is, I'm calling my shot that this will hit well when I'm old. Like, I can see myself being like 65 or older. Retirement.
You're trying
age.
To balance all these wooden shapes together on a table.
Yeah, I'm retired and I'm spending all my days just trying to balance wooden shapes. And yeah.
You'll put it on your goggles, you know, and then you'll be like, oh, wow, I finally get it.
Yeah.
That's how it was with Wind Rise. I remember seeing that in theaters, and that was probably the first Ghibli movie I saw in theaters, maybe.
Same. Yeah.
And I remember thinking like, oh, that was good, but then it really like it wasn't profound to me. And then I watched it, you know, 10, 15 years later, or whatever, and I was like, oh my God, it's all there. And it's just like, and it had to do with being more context and more well versed in his stuff too. But I'm like, we don't, it's rare to have like a movie like this that's about, this is about the guy, you know, or about his life. You know, that's it.
It's funny because like The Wind Rises feels like it's so personal and like it's like that was going to be his last movie. And it feels like, oh, wow, he really threw everything out of this movie. And then 10 years later, there's this. And it's like, you thought that was everything. Here's like the real shit.
Yeah. I know that one just feels like now more surface level compared to.
Yeah. Wind Rises is like basic bitch.
Yeah.
Like, the hair is like the real.
And I love that movie now, but it made me cry and stuff. But maybe I'm like, you're now like the age of how probably the character is in that type of thing, and you're like, was it worth even like doing this for my career anymore? It's like, yeah, maybe. But now in this, watching this, yeah, right, this one with old guy, you're like, nah, nothing matters. It just,
Dave, do you relate to the granduncle and your, you know, running the store and your podcast empire? Is that, do you see that as kind of your world and your legacy?
And you're watching it crumble when you go, you know?
Well, yeah, watching it crumble all the time.
I did do a little bit of poking around. So I was right. How do you live? And I guess this is probably what the novel is in the book, in the movie. It is about like a kid like getting like, bullied. And that's the only really thing pulled from the book is like the kid going to school and getting bullied. And it's basically a book about like support and advice for a living type of thing. You know, and
does
like,
it even have the Alice in Wonderland angle?
No, nothing like that. No.
Oh, really?
It's about like structure of society, relation, view of things.
Is it like a how to win friends and influence people kind of
but more about like just thinking about like expanding your worldview. Like there's a quote, like there's a one line pulled. It does have, I guess it's written kind of like how in the book he sees his mom's handwriting and stuff like that, kind of to him. But in the book, in the wind, this one, it's like an uncle talking to their nephew or something like that. And there's one quote here they have pulled in the Chadpedia. It says, thinking like Copernicus said, our Earth is a celestial body moving within the vastness of space. Or thinking that our Earth is fixed at the center of the universe are two ways of thinking that, in reality, are not only related to astronomy. That's a weird line. Even when we think about things like the world around us or our own lives, the truth is that we are still revolving around them after all. That mean anything to you? I had to read it a couple times to.
It means everything to me, Ryan.
Yeah, I guess it's like you can look at the world where you're the center of the universe, or that you're just part of the revolving thing. It's still things are still revolving either way. I think is that what it's saying? Yes. I don't know that relates to this movie at all, but that's like the big quote.
It relates, I think, in that it's weird.
But it does say
life will go on. Essentially, is that what it's saying?
This is the scintillating filmversation analysis you wanted, Dave.
I guess you can think of the world. Yeah, that's how I just took it. It's like some people think about it just like everybody revolves around me, or I'm just revolving or like floating through space like the rest of everybody else kind of thing.
Yeah,
which is probably the better way to think about it.
I would love to hear someone who is Japanese talk about this movie, because I'm wondering like what the kind of lost in translation or kind of cultural stuff is going on here that maybe would make this movie more sensical or a little more
less
like
nebulous.
Yeah. But I do think, again, I do think a lot of it is just dream logic and dream. Yeah. Vibes.
I think, I mean, that's what people say about, like, you know, in Spirited Away has a lot of like those type of things, like really, folktale-y kind of characters.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I mean, I could be wrong. I maybe even be hearing when this came out that like a lot of this is just like not really related to like Japanese culture or anything like that.
It's just his dreams.
Well, that would be good to know too. If I spoke to a Japanese person, they were like, "Yeah, no, it's fucking incomprehensible. Like, I don't understand anything in here."
Yeah, that Kingdom of Dreams and Madness, it's worth watching because it's a lot of like himself reflecting, and he sounds like the grand uncle or something. And it's interesting seeing these dynamics with the people he's working with, because everyone respects him so much, and he's so funny but so dry. And like also,
he's
very
also can we agree that Hayao Miyazaki has the best hair a human being has ever had?
I don't know how.
I just like his look with his glasses and everything.
It's great. He looks like a cartoon character.
Yeah, he looks like one of those guys he would have drawn, you know?
Yeah.
But, well, I think you nailed on something, Mike. This just seems like a movie that like I think people should revisit every like 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
As they age, as they mature, as they can maybe,
and I would say like don't. I think the way to approach this movie is to not worry about like trying to assign meaning to everything. Yeah, don't. It's not a Nolan thing. You know, it's not a puzzle box. I think you just kind of let it. The best way to experience is just let it wash over you. You know, something we didn't mention. The music in this is like so dang good. I wanted to hit that. It's like it's kind of like sparse in a way. There's a lot of points where there's no music, and when it comes in, a lot of times it's just like a piano and like a violin.
Well,
or,
sometimes
you know,
it's often one key on a piano. Ding, yeah. Ding, and they just let it right out.
it's really cool. Like, I think it adds a lot to the vibe of the movie. Like, you could recut this with a different soundtrack and it would give a very different feeling.
Sad score, and like, it's sad piano. I think we mentioned it before. Sad piano always gets me.
I can't believe his line is, this is Joe
Satahashi.
Yeah, so he's done
like all of it, right? It's the guy. And which is interesting that it's the same guy, because it is so different than I feel like the typical. I mean, I'll be honest. Maybe this is on me, but Ghibli soundtracks or Miyazaki soundtracks don't ever really stand out to me too much.
Yeah, I think you got to go back and listen to Spirited Away, Kiki's and stuff.
There's... Well, yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's just so seamless. I'm not thinking about it.
You'll hear it. Like Tortoros is like really. Like, you'll be like, oh,
well,
yeah.
You just touched on something reading in the notes. Apparently Miyazaki was kind of against like surround tracks for his movie. Like, he's like, I kind of just want it more front and center. Like, I don't want you to get distracted with surround effects and shit.
Yeah.
Classic old man.
Yeah. I mean, he's onto something with that kind of stuff.
Do you think
though.
was there a 4DX release of this movie?
This was IMAX and Atmos.
Yeah. I did. I think I saw it in IMAX, or Limax, whatever. It wasn't a real IMAX, but yeah, 4DX. You know, just spray water at you with, you know, the fish and stuff, and
it's funny looking
shit,
at
bird shit dropping on you.
His discography, because he did a movie. You know, I don't know what year we are now, but in 2025, that I was excited to watch and I didn't go see.
Who did?
The composer, Hisayashi. He did one called, it's a movie that
he did the music for, right?
Yeah, Kokonada did, who's a director I like a lot. He did After Yang and Columbus, and he did this movie that everyone kind of hated called A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey with like Margot Robbie and Colin Farrell last year, and no one saw it. I didn't even see it. And he did the music for that, and he doesn't have a lot of live action scores. So I'm
After Yang was good. I like that movie.
I love After Yang. And the this Coconata guy is like an amazing director, but I think that movie must have not worked. I don't know, because no one liked it very much. But I don't see any of the live action scores on his list other than this. So.
Well, future gift idea for Mike and Ryan for me. Just write that down. Miyazaki on vinyl. Anyway.
Oh, those are cool looking things. The thing with those Miyazaki vinyls, like, there's usually like three different ones for each movie. There's like
they're beautiful.
Like the outtakes. There's the one from the movie. Oh. There's like inspiration. It's like, and they're all in Japanese. You don't know which one's which.
I don't know what you're looking at.
I don't know what I'm looking at when I see those in the store. They're all beautiful though. I'm like, do I
they're
get all three?
As indecipherable as the movies themselves.
The movies are not indecipherable. They're pretty easy to follow. This is the only one.
This is the weird one.
Any closing thoughts on The Boy and the Heron, or how do you live?
How do you live? I think this is maybe the best. Well, March of the Penguins is pretty good. There's a lot of bird representation in this movie, certainly more than the bird cage. Yeah. So I think like thematically it's doing, I think it's just under March of the Penguins as far as like bird month
which
movies
was all go. Birds.
Yeah, which is all bird. Hard to beat March of the Penguins.
I mean, this is a lot of different types of birds in it. I think
and they're doing crazy things.
This is a bird movie, you know.
That's a movie for real bird fans know, you know?
I mean, granted, we did see a lot of plumage in the bird cage, but it's like
people
only
peacocking,
in the beginning,
you know,
the end.
Like Nathan Lane peacocking around.
Yes, a lot of peacocking in the bird cage, but I so far, I mean, I haven't watched our final movie yet in March of the Penguins, another bird related films. But I'm gonna give the crown to Boy and the Heron as far as, I think you're right, as far as bird representation.
Yeah, he's pretty good. I think he's destined, the Gray Heron is destined to be like a classic guy. You know, I think it's going to take a few years, but I think he's going to be like, you know, he's going to be dancing around whatever. And like,
there's going to be 20 somethings with tattoos of the bird.
Yeah, there's going to be like, you know, cuckoo clocks and stuff with the heron and everything.
One day we're going to go to the one of the cool bars in Bartertown, and there's going to be some hipster 20-year-old, and he's going to serve us a beer and he's going to have like a cool,
like a sleeve,
fat,
like a boy,
yeah,
heron
sleeve of just that fat Robert Pattinson heron, you know.
When we're listening to AI WTF and AI Mark Maron says, "Hey, who you guys?"
you just gave me the chills. That's crazy. Right?
I really wish WTF was back. Wait a minute. What if I type in the prompt, make a WTF, new WTF podcast?
Yeah, we'll have the AI WTF episode with Hayao Miyazaki as a guest. Yeah. Really
like, I want Mark Maron to interview Mr. Beast. You know, I never did that.
And we could do that.
Who are your guys, Mr. Beast?
Who are your guys?
Well, if we're getting into recommendations, I mean, like I said, I don't go into this not trying to find any sort of meaning, because you're going to be let down. Just let it wash over you. Go into this thinking like Hollywood just came up with this new technology where they can literally incept someone's mind and put those images on screen in hand-drawn animation. Because that's essentially what this movie is. It's just someone's weird musings and dreamings put on screen via animation.
Yeah, it's incredible. You're right. It's hard to understand or explain, but I kind of find kind of incredible, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Anyway.
I recommend it. I like it. It's a weird one. It's a weird one.
Join us, man.
I'll be your guide, David.
Well, when March of the Penguins and other bird-related films concludes, we'll be watching something that we're going to be switching gears completely. We'll be going back to, I believe, the 30s with the Marx Brothers with Duck Soup. Pretty hard pivot, I know. We'll see if that makes any more sense than The Boy and the Heron.
I was trying to think of what Groucho says. Does he have a thing that he says?
The Marx Brothers are a complete blind spot for me.
That's
I have
a
no
big
idea.
Bowl of duck soup.
I don't even know if duck soup is mentioned in duck soup.
What a bowl of duck soup.
Yeah.
Too much tuna. Too much duck soup.
Not enough duck in this duck soup.
That's close. He's very bugged, so... You know.
Just imagine all of us motioning with a cigar in our hands.
We have just imagine
Maito, Maito.
Really fast, eyebrows. Fast. Big eyebrows.
Yeah, they have to talk really fast too.
Well.
Your presence is welcomed. Enter.